Last week, British archaeologists announced they'd found what appeared to be the remains of Richard III, King Richard III, the original my horse, my kingdom for a horse, the misguided king of Shakespeare himself, Richard III. Found, zounds, why these bones would tell a tale from legend and craft a forensic beacon from ancient pain, bones that cry out, bones that weep. Oh, my kingdom for a guest right about now. Joining me now, thankfully, is Anya Saffer, theater director and instructor at the Atlantic Acting School. Welcome to the program. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, John.
These bones really do tell a story specifically about the physical configuration of this famous character from Shakespeare.
They do.
And what were the characteristics of Richard himself that bore directly on the play Richard III?
Well, there's been a tremendous amount of argument on the part of historians about the degree to which Richard was disfigured, the actual Richard. Of course, Shakespeare's Richard has a withered arm and a hunchback and a limp. Many historians have said that actual Richard had no disfigurements, had no handicaps whatsoever, that it would actually have been impossible because he was such a great warrior. He was the last English king to fight on the battlefield alongside his soldiers, and they said that that would have absolutely been impossible. So if these bones are in fact historical Richard, that would prove that obviously incorrect.
And indeed, among the details is that he had scoliosis, which would have been a reason for him to be hunched over, which in some descriptions is what was his situation. As you say, Shakespeare talks about the withered arm. There's nothing in the forensics of this skeleton to suggest that, but it does appear, according to the investigators, that he died on the battlefield, which is very consistent with how the play turns out.
Indeed.
Yeah. So first of all, it's fairly clear, and we'll quote a little bit from Richard III here. Our colleague Jeffrey Spurgeon here is reading the parts from Richard III. It's fairly clear that the king would not be happy about any of this.
Good friend, for Jesus' sake, forbear to dig the dust and close it here. Blessed be the man that spares these stones, and cursed be he that moves my bones.
Shakespeare's epitaph that he self-scripted.
And in so many ways, this play is about mortality, in the sense that we come to just this filth called dust and bones, and there should be no romanticism about our lives so much.
Absolutely. Well, it's interesting because in the play, there it's just a bloodbath. And the bodies themselves are disposed of and discussed in a remarkably cavalier way. In fact, when the princes of the Tower are killed, Richard checks in with his hitman afterwards and says, how did it go? The hitman says, well, it was fine. And Richard says, well, come over later for dessert and you'll tell me about the whole process.
Listen here, it appears as though Richard has a bit of an epiphany there at the end, which history doesn't necessarily show us.
My conscience hath a thousand several tongues, and every tongue brings in a several tale, and every tale condemns me for a villain. Perjury, perjury in the highest degree, murder, stem murder in the direst degree. All several sins, all used in each degree, throng to the bar, crying all, guilty, guilty. I shall despair. There is no creature loves me. And if I die, no soul shall pity me.
And that's sort of as it turns out, even with the discovery of these bones.
I think that's true. I think that there's been a lot of advocacy on the part of the historical Richard. A lot of people are eager to clear the good name of Richard. They say, well, if you look at it in the scheme of things with the Dark Ages and all, he wasn't really so bad. And he deserves a lot more credit than he got.
We'll do a little of a resurrection here. We're talking with Anya Saffer, who's theater director and instructor at the Atlantic Acting School, about the discovery of the bones of Richard III. This is The Takeaway. What can be taught to students who come to Richard III and try to figure out what kind of a character he is?
Well, I think that it's extremely important to take your character's side in the depicting of them, not to sentimentalize them, but to bring some sense of morality to what they do, some sense to what they do. And I think that obviously Richard is a very hard case in terms of doing that. You can't twirl your mustache and play the villain. You have to look at what is perhaps motivating him in a way that at least you can find sympathetic, even if of course, in the end, the audience won't find him to be entirely sympathetic.
And here was an individual who expressed no vulnerability, who would not allow for the possibility of mistakes, who believed conspiracies were all around him, even as he was a spectacular warrior.
Yes, but I do think that in the opening monologue that famously begins with "Now is the winter of our discontent," he does give us some seeds in the way of motivation that I think is extremely easy to sympathize with. Everyone in the play seems to think that he was born evil, born with a full set of teeth and a big mop of hair. But Richard himself says that he was born with a desire to love but was not allowed to, and that he was treated like a dog, and that he has been left no recourse but to play the role of the villain.
And the historical record, not so much the record, the legend tells us that because he was disabled, he got all of this sort of misery heaped upon him.
Exactly. That was a sort of common Renaissance thought, that the outward appearance is a direct reflection of the soul.
And the bones in this particular case would have been crafting the body and this deformed look that then produced all of that sort of social blowback, in the sense that he could not ever get the respect that he thought he deserved.
Absolutely.
Do you think, you know, and here's a guy, again, doesn't speak in terms of vulnerability, doesn't necessarily want to project his morality, even though it might be internal. Here's a quote: "Conscience is but a word that cowards use, devised at first to keep the strong in awe. Our strong arms be our conscience, swords our law." Hard to drum up a lot of sympathy for somebody who believes that and tells his soldiers that.
Yes. Well, it's interesting because right before that, he has the famous dream in which all of the ghosts of the dead come and visit him, and his conscience pricks him. So I think that he's giving that speech. He's mustering up his fortitude himself. But I think that what he might be saying is a little bit different from the inner tremulousness that he's actually experiencing.
Well, in the bones of Richard III that have been discovered by these investigators, we do see the vulnerability of a king who died in battle. In this play, Shakespeare struggles with the idea of vulnerability for a warrior. He has to be self-aware, yet he has to project a kind of perfection and imperviousness. It's a difficult road to hoe.
Yeah, it's interesting because in Henry V, we have a sort of similar model to that. But of course, we love Henry. He's a wonderful man and a wonderful king, and we root for him as he summons up the will to encourage his you know, understaffed English army to beat the French.
Oh, he's a come-from-behind victor. Richard III is exactly the opposite.
Yeah, I think that it's implied in the play that Richard loses to Richmond because of the weakening, that his conscience is pricking him and he's starting to weaken and starting to see himself for what he really is. He says that wonderful line, he's alone, and he says, "Is there a murderer here?" "No." "Yes."
Mm, that ambivalence.
Yeah, that's what leads him to lose to Richmond.
Well, we've discovered the bones and much wisdom yet to be discovered about the character of Richard III. Anya Saffer, who is a theater director and instructor at the Atlantic Acting School, thanks so much.
Thank you.